Hello, Health Investor. Welcome to another episode of the Health Investment Podcast. Today, you're going to hear from Heather Heinen. Heather is a licensed professional counselor of mental health, qualified mental health professional, life coach, FMS certified exercise professional, health coach, and podcaster. She's been working in private practice for over 20 years as a licensed mental health therapist, life coach, and health coach. Heather is a recovered binge eater, restrictor, yo-yo dieter, and she suffered with anxiety for years. This led her to creating and hosting the podcast Weight Loss and Wellness for Real, and also creating online courses with the purpose of helping others find food and body freedom, as well as purpose and joy in life. In the episode, Heather shares the difference between mindful and intuitive eating, how to get emotional eating urges under control, a practical strategy to cut back on overeating, and more. If you're liking this podcast, I'd be so grateful if you'd write a review and share it with a friend. Enjoy the episode. Simonson, certified nutrition coach and your host of the Health Investment Podcast. If you're ready to look and feel your best without any confusion, frustration, or stress, you're in the right place. Each week, I interview experts and share no-nonsense, research-backed tips so that you can finally lose weight for good, eat healthy long-term, have the high energy you crave, and feel like a million bucks. I'm so happy you're here with me today. Don't forget to hit subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Hi, Heather. Thank you so much for joining me today on the Health Investment Podcast.
Hello, Brooke. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you as well. I was saying off air that I just feel like I can't cover the topic of emotional eating, mindful eating, binge eating, so many different words surrounding this topic, so many terms. Yeah. And I can't cover it enough. And my audience just wants more, 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 because every single person struggles with this, I think, in one way, shape, or form. And I'm just really excited to hear your take on these topics.
You bet. I'm excited to be here.
Can you start off by telling us a bit about your background and specifically what led you to want to help people eat more mindfully?
Yes, for sure. So professionally, I'm a licensed professional counselor, mental health. So my letters behind my name are an LPCMH, qualified mental health professional. And I am older, so I've been doing this for almost 25 years now in private practice. And so seeing clients one-on-one. And about 15 years ago or so, I kind of really wanted to move more into the realm of some health coaching. So I've always kept my private practice, but I sort of added the health coaching or weight loss coaching into that. And I really got into that because I personally had probably in about my early 20s, I had started rock climbing, and that's a real strength to weight ratio. And I could be very competitive. And so I really got into wanting to get smaller for rock climbing. Mm-hmm. And I had had some food issues before that too, but that's kind of when I really started with heavy restriction. And then due to the heavy restriction, of course, that turned into tons of binging behavior. And then I would restrict more as sort of a purging cycle because I could never get myself to throw up. It was just too hard. So I would use over-exercising to do it. So I struggled with that for a really, really long time. And as a mental health therapist, it was sort of like I was helping people in all these other areas of their lives. But because this sort of became my issue, it was something that I really, I guess, ended up feeling really passionate about, because it was a long time to get through that and to find recovery. And there was so much involved in that. But being on the other side of it, there was such a sense of freedom and like getting my life back. And so I really had this heart for wanting to really help other people who were struggling with that. Any sort of binge eating, emotional eating, disordered eating, really had a heart for wanting to help move people through that while kind of using, what I I've been practicing as a mental health therapist. So that's kind of how I got to where I'm at.
I hear so often people say, I just want to eat like a normal person. Have you heard that before?
Oh, yeah. That's so funny because I was just listening to another podcast and that was the word that was being used. And I do use it sometimes. And I'm kind of tongue in cheek. Like, we all just want to eat like a normal person.
Yeah. And I think what goes along with that and what people are meaning is that freedom you describe from feeling the need to overly restrict or to have these obsessive food thoughts and to feel controlled by emotional compulsions to eat. I mean, all of the things, it's just like the weight of that bears down on you. It takes up your life. I just posted on Instagram, actually, right before this. Mm-hmm. I talk a lot with clients about many of them have physical weight to lose, but and you can measure that using the scale or progress photos. Sure. But usually there's some type of mental weight that needs to be released at the same time, especially for the sustainability of it.
That's so I think I completely agree.
You can, anybody can buy the latest juice cleanse, meal replacement bar, whatever, and lose the weight.
Right.
But the long term, I mean, if you're looking 100 years from now or 50 to 100 years, you know, like what happens then? And unless you've tackled the mental side of things, I think success is really tough to sustain.
Completely agree. And, you know, disordered eating is such a tricky thing because it obviously it has to do with food, which it's not like when something else, like in regards to maybe alcohol or drugs, or honestly, even shopping or scrolling or whatever our thing is, eating food is such an interesting one because you'd really need it to be alive. You know, you don't need any of those other things. So it's a whole different approach in regards to that as well. Like, how do we figure out ways to treat this in new and different ways? So,
I think everybody kind of has their own definition of mindful eating, emotional eating, binge eating. How do you define those things and when do they become a problem for people?
Yeah. So really, you know, just because of my profession, you know, if I am in clinic with someone, you know, you use the DSM-5, which is a diagnostic tool that we use. And so binge eating is included in that right now. It wasn't for a long time, but it is. So, you know, if you're looking to a clinician to give you an actual diagnosis, there would be, you know, literally a checklist that, you know, that clinician follows in order to give the diagnosis of binge eating. But emotional eating is not in there, you know. I mean, when we talk about those things, really all that's in there is going to be things like bulimia, anorexia, the binge eating, which now is included. So that's one way to look at it. With that said, I always define binge eating, I can get real simplistic about it. It's sort of like you're eating a really large amount of food that maybe isn't typical for other people, but specifically that makes you feel like, you know, you have overfed yourself. You don't feel good afterwards, but especially that there's shame and guilt after it, you know? So that one. And then if we talk about emotional eating, I think about that as sort of any time we are using food to shift out of a feeling. So a lot of times I'll have clients say things like, well, yeah, you know, when I'm feeling bad or whatever, I mean, we all kind of know a lot of us use food to get out of negative feelings that we're feeling. We don't want to be in that feeling. We want to just eat for a moment and have it go away momentarily. But most of us actually eat when we're feeling pretty good, too. Like, we can be having a really good day or it's a celebration. We're feeling excited. And so we'll emotionally eat. So that's another way to look at emotional eating, that it comes from both sides, not just a negative feeling, but maybe when we're feeling good and excited and we're using food to enhance that feeling. So to me, emotional eating is anytime we're using food to change any feeling that we're having or to sustain the feeling that we're having.
Is emotional eating, in your opinion, something that you can ever completely get rid of? Is that the goal? Or is it just to reduce the amount of times you're doing it?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. Because the truth is, if we kind of think about it, it's sort of like, could we ever possibly not emotionally eat? I mean, Personally, I don't want to go like to my daughter's birthday party and not enjoy some cake with her, you know? But when I do that, I'm sure I'm not hungry every time I'm doing that. So that would be emotional eating. And also, I don't know if it's always such, it doesn't always have to be such a huge problem. I mean, we commune together, we come together over food and through food and breaking bread together. You know, we have, so there's a part of me that really believes some of that's actually kind of important in my book, reduces stress for people, those sort of things. So in my opinion, I don't know if it's wise to think about getting rid of it all, but there definitely are ways, and I know you talk about this on here, but there definitely are ways to limit that emotional eating and to also just feel more in control when you're doing it, to be more aware, more mindful, you know, of when you're doing it. Do you have thoughts on that? Like, what's your
I
opinion on
had
that?
another clinician say kind of the goal isn't to get rid of it, it's to do it in a way that's not interfering with the life you want to lead, which I thought was kind of a
Perfect
cool
way.
way to think about it. And I believe it was her or someone else who said, even when you go to the movies and you get popcorn, that's a form of emotional eating. And it's, is that something you want to cut out? I mean, I don't. And that's also not interfering with the life I want to lead because it's so rare. It's not something I'm doing every single day, and I'm not getting the extra large popcorn. But then at the same time, like you said, feeling more in control of it. So it's, I don't go to the movies and feel like if I get the extra large popcorn, I'm going to eat the entire thing and then feel horrible and shameful and guilty. I feel like I have strategies in place to eat an amount that feels good. And so there's all these things I think that kind of go hand in hand, even when you are eating for an emotional reason, to eat a portion that feels good at the same time is, I think, important.
So that maybe that awareness, the awareness, the mindfulness of what you are doing and being super aware. And then also that sense of feeling in control, you know, just like this is the choice I am making and I'm good with the choice I'm making, you know. I think that could be the best goal to have.
My husband's one of his love languages is getting me a cookie, a chocolate chip cookie
Oh,
at
yes.
a coffee shop or a bakery. He's a big walker, so he gets up earlier than I do. He'll walk around. Sometimes he'll bring me back a latte. And just this morning, I woke up and there's a chocolate chip cookie on the counter. And he
I love
texted,
it.
like, love you. There's a treat on the counter.
Aww.
And so I'm going to eat that today. Either it's a pretty small one, so I'll probably have the entire thing. I'm probably not going to be super hungry when I have it, but it's this act of love and it's a rarity. And I look forward to it versus sometimes he'll bring me a really big one and I'll say, thank you so much. And I'll have half. And then he's like, half your cookie's still here. And I'm like, I'm good. It was really big, but just not feeling like, oh my gosh, there's a cookie in the house. I'm triggered by this. Is this bad? Is this wrong? Am I a bad person? I
All
think,
the thoughts.
right. I think that's what we're trying to break away from. And like you said, we want to feel in control.
And I think too, to your point, if we're talking about what would the goal be? Like, is the goal to not ever emotionally eat? Okay, we've kind of established no, that's not the goal. But the goal we could maybe say would be to not all have all that food chatter all the time or all the body chatter all the time. To your point, anything that's sort of messing with our life, you know, that probably is the best goal to have.
I do think so many diets, speaking of the restriction, also have brought in this all or nothing mindset. So you're either on or you're off. And so I am of the mindset of what I eat and do most of the time matters most. And so I don't think this chocolate chip cookie is going to have any bearing at all on my health, on my weight, on my energy. It's going to happen. And then I'm going to have this vegetable pasta I made for dinner. It's like, it's not an
You know what?
issue.
Sorry, I was just going to say, you know what the beautiful thing is about your mindset there? Because, you know, I always am thinking about our thoughts create our feelings drive our behaviors give us our results create identity, identity again creates the thoughts in our head. So, whatever we're thinking, if we go with that theory, is going to create these feelings within us. So when you eat that cookie, your thoughts are, this cookie is fine. This cookie is not going to do any damage. It's good. I'm enjoying it. So can you even imagine in your body, like the feelings you have? So you're not having shame. You're not having guilt. So you're having this very peaceful feeling experience with the cookie, which we then know means you're not going to jack your cortisol up. The insulin isn't coming in. So you're probably not, I have these theories about if we're thinking that way, we're probably not going to store even that cookie in the same way as if we were so stressed about having it, the shame and guilt, the cortisol is through the ceiling, insulin's coming in, storing it. Do you see what I'm saying? It's like, so even how you're thinking about it is a beautiful way to think about that cookie.
So it all starts with our thoughts is what you're saying.
I think it does. I've been into this thing in my head of, cause I was really into the cognitive behavioral therapy, like the thoughts create the fit. And I do believe that, but there's a cycle in there too. So like, stay with me for a second, create our feelings that drive our behaviors. I do have the sense we can also, if we're trying to make change, yes, to change our thoughts is going to be helpful. And that's a practice, that's a skill, but we can also move into that behavior piece. So I guess one of my thoughts has been, let's say, that I want to start walking every day after a meal or whatever. So I can work on my thoughts. Like I'm coaching myself, Heather, you have to walk, you don't interrupt the thought. And I'm like, no, this is good for me. I'm going to do it. And it motivates me a little willing. So I go do it. But I also think maybe if we just, put our running shoes on before we eat dinner or something like that, or our walking shoes. So like a behavior first. So then I do that. I have that behavior and I just kind of discipline and make myself go for that walk. Then my thoughts change too. So I'm just saying, I think we can work on changing our thoughts to change our feelings. But I also think we could maybe hop into that behavior part of the cycle and also shift everything. So it's probably a little of both.
I want to take a quick break from the episode to tell you about a company I've been impressed by for years. Thrive Market is an online shopping platform that offers thousands of products at 25 to 50% off retail prices. For just $60 a year, you get access to a wide variety of premium pantry staples, supplements, beauty products, and home goods at unbeatable prices. To put things in perspective, I save about $20 to $30 per shipment, which means my annual membership fee pays for itself after just two orders. My favorite part about Thrive Market is that for every paid membership, they donate a membership to a low-income family, veteran, or teacher. So not only do you save money on your purchases, but you also make healthy products accessible to everyone. To read my full Thrive Market review, steal my shopping list of over 150 items, and save additional money on your first order, visit thehealthinvestment.com/Thrive Market or just click through the link in the show notes. Now, back to the episode.
Almost like if there's arrows in a circle, they can go both ways.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know. I am always thinking about behavior change and how do we get humans to change the behaviors they want to change and make it last. So yeah, I'm just always thinking of different ways, like how can we make it work?
Well, I think that you make a really good point. I speak very openly with my own clients about my biggest challenge is movement. And I'm talking even going for a walk.
Right.
Most days I would rather just keep working on the thing I'm working on or do the laundry or the dishes, or I can find a million ways to kind of like think my way. I can rationalize. If I think too much, I can rationalize my way out of anything. And often for me, it does start with the behavior of putting my shoes on, putting my AirPods in, getting my keys. And all the thoughts are happening still of like, oh, yeah, you got it. Yes, you can do this. And I'm like, just go. Yeah. Just go.
Exactly. Yeah. So definitely it can be a practice in both, I think. Practice in working on your thoughts to shift those feelings, and a practice in disciplining, maybe that's the wrong word, but just acting, mm-hmm. you know, acting as if making the behavior happen. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I agree. Absolutely. I would love to hear your thoughts on mindful eating and intuitive eating, because that's a new buzz term, maybe not new, but new to some, definitely making the rounds on social media. And I know there's a lot of principles of intuitive eating. There's a whole book. I know if I say something about weight loss and mindfulness, or I think one time I said, eat more intuitively or something in a post, and mm-hmm. a lot of intuitive eaters people came after me. You know, we don't yeah. do weight loss. And it's kind of like, you either are intuitive eating or you're losing weight. You can't have right. kind of an overlap of both. And I know that's a very unique space. So I would love to hear, how are mindful eating and intuitive eating related, if they are, and kind of what's the difference? Where can weight loss fit in?
Yeah. Okay. So I think about mindful eating just as a general definition. You know, mindfulness is just when we are aware of, you know, what's coming into our senses in the present moment. So we're in the moment. What are we feeling? What are we sensing? What are we thinking? We're in that moment, and we're doing it without judgment. So a lot of us do the judgment of our thoughts or the judgment of whatever. I like that smell. I don't, you know, so it's none of that. It's staying away from the judgment, being in the moment. So if we're talking about mindful eating, you know, and I know you know this, but that is a skill that one can practice. And, you know, you're practicing in the moment while you're eating. You're thinking of all your five senses. How does this food smell? How does it taste? And you're taking time and, you know, all these things. And that practice is a wonderful thing because it can help you slow down your eating. It can help you over time eat less. It can help you be very cognizant of your triggers, emotional eating and all of that. And when I think, so this is just a personal thing, maybe we could talk about this, but I don't really like that word intuitive eating, only because I think because it just has all the semantical connotations behind it that you're kind of talking about. So I always stay away from that. And someone, I need to give credit to this person and I can't think who it was, but used the term conscious eating. Mm. And I kind of like that a little better, probably just because I don't like controversy. So I thought, well, now if I start using the word conscious eating, nobody's going to come after me, to your
good
point.
Call. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and conscious eating in my world would be something more along the lines of mindful eating, where you're very aware, right? So we're not doing the mindless eating. We're not doing the emotional eating without being aware of it. It's just very conscious. It's very, we know what we're doing. Maybe we're even planning. Maybe that's part of it too. We're planning our food and those sorts of things. Intuitive eating is a sticky one. And also I think that can be trained as well, but you know, so intuitive eating and weight loss gets a little tricky, I think, just because if we are being, I mean, I could be intuitive in my eating and, you know, intuition would tell me, like, I need the box of cookies, mm-hmm. you know, and that's the binging behavior stuff and the pattern thoughts and everything. So I think it can be tougher for people to pull apart what their intuition, what do we really mean by that word? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. My intuition doesn't often tell me I need a vegetable. I mean, this is just me, you know? So it's kind of like, but I know I probably should have those sometimes, you know, mm-hmm. or like, I'm really into protein. So like my intuition isn't really telling me I need all this protein, but my knowledge is, you know, so I don't know. Do you have thoughts on that one too?
I have just had so many clients come to me and they've had an intuitive eating coach and I think they've learned a lot about themselves and kind of like the mental weight of things.
Yeah.
But then they're usually like this extra piece is missing that you're kind of describing, of the knowledge of what protein and fiber can do for your hunger and fullness cues, for example.
Yes, or, right.
You know, the knowledge of what actually works when it comes to weight loss versus somebody's opinion on social media. And so do find that a lot of people who gravitate towards intuitive eating also have a weight loss goal. And I think from what I've heard, people can just feel frustrated because it's not really accepted in that space to talk about that. It's more just let's lean into what your body wants. And I know there, yeah, it depends on the practitioner as well. I mean,
it does. Yeah.
Some
for
are,
sure.
Some have more of a framework. Some have more of an education. Some are more kind of loosey-goosey. I don't know. It's dependent on the person, but I like that a lot. The conscious eating.
And, yeah. Yeah.
You know, mindful eating, just staying away. I learned from that one time.
Yeah. Exactly. I know. Like I said, it's sort of just a semantic thing.
Totally.
You know, it probably shouldn't be a big deal, but because there is social media and nutrition is such a tough space, and because that word is out there, yeah, it creates maybe more issues just using the word than needs to be there. So
absolutely. Yeah. Would you say the strategies to, I mean, so first of all, you're talking from a clinical perspective, there's binge mm-hmm. eating. So there's binge eating disorder. And so let's maybe frame it more as overeating, because I think a lot of people can relate to overeating.
Yeah.
Would you say the strategies for working on your overeating tendencies are the same that you're talking about in terms of mindful eating and to get emotional eating more under control, or are the strategies kind of different depending on what your main challenge is?
Yeah. Well, I think in general, mindful eating, practicing, learning the skill of mindful eating is going to be beneficial across the board. I mean, I really believe that, you know, because we kind of talked about it does end up sort of slowing things down a little bit. Typically, if you get good at it, for most overeaters, their overeating really slows down. So they might have a time where they're still overeating, like say they're overeating, you know, 3 meals a day or more than that. And they get really good at mindful. Maybe it just only happens once a day. So we see the intensity and frequency go down with overeating when mindfulness is put into practice. And I mean, practiced, you know, until that becomes a skill, we do have to keep doing it over and over. So I think in general, it's going to help across the board for all those things. And are you trying to draw a distinction between like emotional eating emotional eating and overeating?
I guess to make it clear also is just, is the answer just more mindful eating?
I see what you're saying.
For something like emotional eating and overeating, is that?
Yeah, I'm going to say no.
Okay.
I'm going to say that is a skill. I think it's really an important part of the whole process. But personally, and doing this for 25 years, you know, there's more involved in it. I'm going to be a little biased because of my profession. So I do get into with clients, you know, here's what I think. I think understanding your narrative and your story of how it all began and having clarity around that can be really helpful in regards to your relationship with food. So going into, okay, how did this start, or maybe even why did this start? What is the narrative? So that, and it's not even about, we can throw around the words trauma and things like that. It's not even necessarily so much as having to work with a therapist to go through trauma, although that can be helpful, but it's sort of like just getting that clarity around your story of how it began. And the reason I think that piece is important, and I think it gets skipped over a lot, I think that when we have clarity, we understand ourselves better. And when we have an understanding, that's when we can start to give ourselves a little bit of grace and self-compassion. I think when we don't have clarity around our story in regards to our relationship with food and our relationship with our bodies, and we're overeating and we're binging or we're doing whatever our thing is with food, it's hard to start to cultivate self-compassion with ourselves. And I think without that relationship with ourselves, it gets hard to heal from the emotional eating or the overeating. So that's sort of this whole other component. Like I said, I am kind of biased in that, you know, that's a whole other component. And then, you know, another piece of that puzzle too, is that for many of us in those places, we've done a lot of the restricting or the yo-yo dieting and then the overeating and then restricting and the overeating. And, you know, part of that too, to get out of that cycle is learning how do we actually nourish our bodies. So I think that's another piece of we need to have our bodies nourished first before we can even start to work through the emotional eating or the overeating or the binging, if that makes sense.
It's so interesting. I wonder if you've encountered this where I'll have a client who thinks they have to do intermittent fasting because they've seen any number of people say it. So they've been cutting out breakfast. Lunchtime hits, they're famished.
Totally.
And so maybe they even consume double the calories they would have at lunch.
Yes, exactly.
And then same with dinner. And then they're snacking at night and they're thinking, they're telling me I have this crazy urge at night. I'm snacking. Yeah. I'm emotional eating. And then we kind of adjust their day and we look at it. And I say, what if you were to just trust me? Let's try breakfast. Some people do great without breakfast, but let's just try it. And let's start the day with a lot of protein and let's see how that affects the rest of your day. The number of times somebody has come back and said, those nighttime cravings and urges have kind of disappeared. Or the amount of control I feel at night is night and day.
Right.
And so they think, I have this problem. I'm this emotional eater. I can't control myself. What is wrong? And like you said, maybe you're just not nourishing yourself enough throughout the day.
Exactly.
And so sometimes the emotional eating isn't actually emotional eating. It's eating out of hunger.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. That was a huge thing for me personally. And that was the only way I ended all my binging. Was I just finally was like, you have to eat, because I was just restricting so much. To your point, I see it all the time, like people skipping breakfast. So if I ever, and I do, I have a couple online courses, and in one of them, it is with overeating. That's one of the first things I talk about in there, is you have to have protein at breakfast. Like, it's just for me as a coach and a therapist, it's a must. If someone comes to me with overeating, binging, emotional eating issues, and it is so funny. I love how you said that, because there's so much pushback because of the fasting stuff that goes on. And for some people that does work great. And, you know, but if you are especially a binge eater or a chronic overeater, you really have to figure out how to feel satiated in your body so that those cravings and urges are not coming up. I mean, that is what triggers. I mean, the moment an urge comes on to overeat or to binge, the body does not feel safe. Mm-hmm. So it's like when you learn to give that your body safety signals in all possible ways, which means nourishing it with food, it needs that to feel safe. Take away so many times where that urge is there, you know?
Somebody commented on one of my posts the other day, and I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on this. They said, but if I start eating breakfast, then that kind of opens the floodgates. It's almost like the first meal of the day, then I can't stop eating. So if I just push that first meal back, it's better. And what would your response be to that?
Yeah, I used to think that too. And I did that for a long time. I believe it doesn't work. I think that can work for a time, but I really have not seen that ever be able to be sustainable, ever. I think you end up really wearing, so if you're not nourishing, you end up wearing out your body in different ways, metabolism slowing down. It's just, it all ends up backfiring down the road, maybe a little bit further, you know? And I would encourage that person, and especially if they're working with you or a coach or someone, because it can help if you have someone else you're partnering with to talk about these things, but to keep having breakfast and to, you know, work through the day. And it's like, yep, you might start binging, then it goes on and on. My guess would be maybe 7 days of that, maybe, probably more like three, to where it's like, yep, you had 3 days where it was just this raising, you know, all the things we know in regards to overeating and binging, and yep, that went on, but it dies down after a while because the body learns, oh, she's going to feed me or he's going to feed me regularly. I don't have to throw up all these crazy urges. In fact, kind of starting to feel full now, I don't really even need to eat, right? You know, I just really have seen it always be able to morph into that, where the binging or the overeating tends to go away over time. I get it. I've been there. Mm-hmm. I understand that. You eat breakfast, it feels like now it's on, and it is on, you know, for a few days. But my I would guess, heavily guess, that would end and taper off. And then you're finally at a space where you can start to work through what you need to work through to get over the overeating and binging. Yeah.
Outside of hosting this podcast, I work as a nutrition coach specializing in evidence-based sustainable weight loss. If you're ready to stop yo-yo dieting and start living a healthy, active lifestyle you're proud of, I'd love to work with you in one of my programs. Unlike restrictive, one-size-fits-all diets that only provide short-term results, I help you adopt science-backed nutrition and lifestyle habits that work for your unique likes, dislikes, and time constraints so you can lose weight permanently, have high energy throughout the day, feel completely in control of cravings, and stay consistent long-term. To learn more, visit thehealthinvestment.com or follow me on Instagram and TikTok at The Health Investment.
Let's say someone is nourishing at breakfast, lunch, dinner. They're really prioritizing protein. They're eating fiber. They're getting enough food. And still at night, that's when the trigger comes. It's either out of habit or the stress from work or anxiety about the health of a family member. And it leads to the emotional eating and or overeating.
Yeah.
What are some of your favorite practical strategies, especially for dealing with those urges and cravings at night?
Yeah. So the one that I love the most, and I do go into detail with this one with my clients and get them accountable to practicing it, but I call it urge surfing. You may have heard of that one. Yeah. So that is my favorite because okay, so we'll explain it quick and maybe your listeners already know what it is, but this would be when you feel the urge coming on. This is how I have my clients practice it. You feel the urge coming on, you set a timer for just 90 seconds. And in that 90 seconds, you're not going to go to food. You're just going to sit for a minute and you are going to literally feel all the horrible feelings. So maybe you're going to name the feelings out loud, which we know when we name feelings out loud, we reduce the stress response, which often can bring that urgy feeling down a little bit. So just naming the feelings. One other caveat to that, a lot of people have a hard time naming feelings. They, you know, most of us have this vocabulary of like sad, mad, happy, you know, but there are thousands of feeling words. And we have research on this too, that the more nuanced you can be at naming your feeling, the more that stress response comes down. So you can Google feelings words or feelings list. You can sit there with your feelings list, scroll through and be like, ugh, that one. So the more nuanced you can get and speaking it out loud, people think I'm crazy, but the science is there. Speak it out loud. I feel, you know, say your word. 90 seconds, tell yourself in that 90 seconds, if I still want to overeat or emotional eat or binge after the 90 seconds, that's fine. That's told I can do that. And we give ourselves that message. So again, that brings the stress response down, because if I'm urging to binge or overeat and I'm telling myself, you're going to sit here for 90 seconds and you cannot binge after this, stress response goes up. So my urge to overeat. So we're doing everything to bring the body down, the tension in the body down in that moment. So I urge surfing on top of the wave of that urge. Can you surf the top of that wave without it flooding you, without it taking you over? So we're surfing that urge. We're sitting in it. We're feeling it. We're naming the feeling. And then the next thing you can do is a body scan where you name the sensations that you're having. So it's like, okay, my head feels kind of tight. My throat is tight. My chest is pounding. A lot of people don't have access to connecting how their feelings create those sensations in their body. What you're going to find is when you do that body scan, you name the feeling, that stress response comes down a lot of times to where that urgy tension in the body feeling to eat and overeat it comes down enough to make a different decision. Not always. And it's a practice. You're literally, and we have brain scans to show this, but training your brain to deal with that urge in a different way. Mm-hmm. And so it does take practice. I think of it as a skill. It's like riding mm-hmm. a bike, practice and practice and practice. And eventually over time, that urge just lessens in intensity and frequency. So you're just not dealing with it as much. That's my favorite skill.
I love that. And can it be as simple as that? That's just the skill you practice over and yes. over and over.
Yes. And then, and I have this in my course too, but I do move people through it then to where, you know, they're practicing the 90 seconds for a certain amount of time. We kind of track, okay, how often did you still then have the binge or the overeat? And was it as much as usual? Or did you do less that time? Because a lot of times it's less, you know, mm-hmm. which is great too. That's a win. And then slowly over time, I have them to where we'll push it up to like 2 minutes or something like that, but super small. I mean, this is all about getting wins, you know,
mm-hmm. yeah. feeling successful yeah. at it. And yeah, I think exactly. the word practice is so important because
yes.
we would not expect to master an instrument, a sport, a exactly. language in one sitting.
Exactly. Exactly. It takes time. And it's so important, I think, to really put that out there, because a lot of times you'll have people who will try it a few times. It's not working, you know, and it's like, I know, but if you just, because I'm sure you've seen it too. And it, for me personally, it really does work, which mm-hmm. is so amazing and freeing, but it does take time and it takes practice. Yeah.
Do you also recommend having kind of a toolbox of non-food related go-tos for different yeah. emotions? I've heard people talk about this before where it's like, One clinician described it as like, if food were never invented, if food didn't exist, yeah, what would you do?
Yeah, for sure. I think that's another great strategy to have in place. And I like to use this again, it just probably speaks to my bias on what I do for a living, but you know, what is my need right now? Hmm. So maybe even when you're surfing the urge in that moment, when you're sitting there, like what is the need right now? What am I lacking right now? Because if you're not hungry, it's not food, you know? Mm-hmm. So what is it? Am I lacking connection? Am I lacking feeling safe? What would make me feel safe? You know, what would make me feel connected? Could I make a phone call? Could I ask, you know, my husband for a hug? Could I, you know, it's getting into the, do I need to just have a little self-soothing? Would a hot bath be helpful? I don't know about you. I am always pretty honest with people. I like to throw out there, nothing's going to be as easy or probably feel as good as food in that mm-hmm. moment. And because mm-hmm. we have the habit going, there's dopamine involved. It's a huge hit when we eat and we're anticipating food. It's all the biochemistry is a little bit working against us there. But so understanding those things are awesome. They're just not going to feel as awesome in the moment. But that doesn't mean if you can get yourself to go take a bath, it's kind of like, yep, it's not as immediate. It's not as dopamine hitting. But once you do it, it brings that whole nervous system back on track. And you might find you can make a different decision after that, you know?
It's interesting as you're describing that, I thought kind of for the first time that nothing feels as good in the moment is food, but also kind yeah. of nothing you would do feels as bad after.
After. That's exactly right. Yes, that is so true, isn't
so
it?
So if you sit with that, the bath isn't going to feel as good in that moment, but it's going to feel much better after.
Exactly.
And you're going to leave that with a win-win of now I'm yeah. de-stressed and I feel really proud of my choice.
Yes.
Versus yes. the food felt really good in a minute. And then you're just, yep. ugh, like, why did I do that? I shouldn't have eaten.
Exactly.
I always do this. And then you're more stressed.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I always think about this whole journey as well. I think about the safety signals a lot, which go into like, how do I just get myself feeling more safe so I can feel more calm, so that I can pause and make different decisions. And, you know, I think everything that we're talking about kind of leads into that of just like, how do we slow the whole nervous system down in those moments? Those of us with, you know, binging behaviors, overeating behaviors, emotional eating, there is this piece of like almost an addictive process to that, you know, where it feels so urgent, like I have to do it, I have to have it. And I think the idea of whatever tools we can use, whatever strategies we can use, and they're probably going to be different ones at different times for each of us, and each of us are going to have ones that work better for us. But it's all about that, and the mindfulness, all about slowing everything down, just mm-hmm. like slowing down, you know, getting that nervous system back into maybe the parasympathetic for the moment, just really figuring out, how do I create pause here?
Mm-hmm. In terms of mindful eating, I feel like that can be another sort of nebulous, like, what does that even mean?
Yeah.
Do you have a very practical strategy to kind of reconnect and eat more mindfully that you encourage people to practice?
Yeah, I do. And kind of a couple different little things, but often it's probably the typical that you've heard, but, you know, just where can you just sit down? Can you sit down mm-hmm. for your food? So even if you're at the office or whatever, can you just sit down? Can you not eat at the counter, just whatever you're eating, I don't care, but take it somewhere and sit. So just practicing sitting, because it creates that little bit of pause, that little slow down, you know? And then there's quite a few of them, like, can you put your fork down between bites, you know, things like anything to slow it down again. Sometimes I have clients who are just like the super fast eaters, and they always have been. So we'll set timers, like where they're, can you increase your meal time from 5 minutes to 15 minutes, which means they kind of got to breathe between bites. They have to take their time, trying to work on not being distracted while eating. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's a big one, because a lot of people like their screens while they're eating. And so sometimes I like to baby like stepping stone behaviors for people. And so I'll ask them to do things like, okay, can you practice at least one meal putting your phone or screen away? And if you need to, like, read a magazine or read a book. So that's sort of a stepping stone mm-hmm. behavior. Just to, again, it slows the mind down, you know, but they still have something, you know, mm-hmm. you get in those habits. So yeah, things like that. And then, I mean, overall, again, mindfulness is just all about practicing that being aware and in the moment. So sometimes I feel like, even I mentioned this before, but planning our food out for the day, for some people, that's really beneficial who are working on emotional or overeating. That's a piece of being mindful, because we're mm-hmm. pre-planning, you know, all those things. Yeah.
I had one client who had just, obviously everybody's busy, right? It's like right. the busiest lifestyle.
Yes, yes.
She also had a challenging child. And just a lot going on was really struggling with the mindful eating. And she came up with, which I thought was so brilliant, she just had this like note card system mm-hmm. where she would have different note cards with different breakfasts and different lunches that she rotated through. And at night, the night before, she would just put them out on her counter of here's my breakfast, here's my lunch, here's what I'm making for dinner. And
I love it.
She would just wake up and see those and just feel so at peace that she had a plan for herself.
Decision made.
No decision fatigue. Crazy. Nope. She just picked up, like, everything's going nuts. And my lunch note card says I have stuff to make a sandwich in the fridge. And I just thought it was brilliant. Just anything to kind of make things more simple. I think we feel like it has to be so complicated. And I think, again, diets have taught us that, but it can really just be very simple.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be hard. There's lots of strategies that, you know, that work for different people that can be put into place, and to really be able to feel like you're in that more mindful space with food, which, again, it's kind of like creating those wins for ourselves too, can be such a big component of that. Yeah,
absolutely. One of the final questions I ask each of my guests is, in your opinion, what does it mean to make the health investment?
Yeah. So I think for me, when, you know, I was thinking of that question, the first word that popped into my head was commitment. And I do think about that word a lot, because I used to use the word try, or would hear the word try from clients a lot. And I think if we're talking about an investment, so whether it would be financial or health in this case, you know, we want to think about not trying, for that, but committing. So making a commitment. So when I do, you know, when I'm making financial investment, it's always for the future. So the health investment is going to be for your future. So you want to really be thinking about future you, future relationships with your kids, with your spouse. So how do you want that future you to be? And then to really look at, so how do I invest in that now? Because that's mm-hmm. what's going to, whatever I'm doing now for my health is going to really play out heavily in 10 to 20 years. So yeah, thinking about it as a commitment, not just trying, but committing and making decisions around it. Yeah.
That try word is so sneaky. How it seeps in. I'll even still say it, but I'm very attuned to it now.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And I've used the example before with clients. Imagine if your kid came home and said, "Oh, I'll try to do my homework tonight."
Exactly.
Or if you say, "Hey, I really need you to unload the dishwasher," and they're like, "I'll try," you'd be like, "No,
no way." Exactly.
You're gonna do it.
That's right. So, yeah. But I love that because that's a language then we can use with ourselves. You know, it's like, yeah, pull that word try out of our vocabulary and yeah.
It's a sneaky one.
Decision or commitment.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I will do it. Yeah, absolutely. Where can listeners follow and find you?
Oh yeah. So I'm on Instagram at Heinen, H-E-Y-N-E-N, Heinen Counseling and Coaching. It's a long one. And then you can get to everything from my website, and that's just www.heatherheinen.com. I also have a podcast called Weight Loss and Wellness for Real. So you can come on over there and listen to some things. But yeah, my website's probably you can get to all my courses. You can get to everything from there, my podcast. So that'd be
awesome.
The best place.
Well, I will link to your Instagram, website, and podcast in the show notes. Awesome. So it's easy to click through. And again, I just want to thank you so much. I knew it was going to be an enriching conversation. And it was. And so I just thank you so much for your time, Heather.
Thanks so much, Brooke. I appreciate being here.
Well, that's all for today. Thanks again for joining me here on the Health Investment Podcast. I'm so grateful for each and every one of my listeners. On your way out, remember to hit subscribe so that you never miss an episode. See you next week. All content in this podcast was created for general informational purposes only by a non-physician. None of the content should serve as a substitute for professional medical advice, treatment, or diagnosis. Always consult a qualified health provider with any questions regarding a medical condition and before making changes to your diet, lifestyle, and/or exercise programs. Do not disregard any professional medical advice you have received or postpone seeking such advice because of something you heard on this podcast.